some of my songs I have casually mentioned the fact that I like to drink beer. This little song is more to the point. Roll out the barrel and lend me your ears. I like beer. It makes me a jolly good fellow. I like beer. It helps me unwind, and sometimes it makes me feel mellow.
Makes him feel mellow.
Welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. It's November 16th, 2010. I'm Jimmy Carbone, your host from Jimmy's Number 43. Beer Sessions Radio is sponsored by GreatBrewers.com. This is where the beer industry meets the larger beer community. See the latest updates for Beer Cloud, a mobile app to help you locate your favorite beers, store tasting notes, and keep in touch with beer events and beer groups in your area. Check out GreatBrewers.com. We're also supported by the people at the Good Beer Seal, an association of 27 New York City bars that serve, promote, and support good beer. Check out GoodBeerSeal.com. My co-host tonight is Ray Dieter. How you doing, Ray?
Hey, Jim. I'm doing good, man. Good. Spent the afternoon pairing beer and cheese. We're doing a tasting tonight at DBA Brooklyn, and had a great afternoon of beering and cheesing.
Are there any specific beers that you'll be serving tonight?
It's Alpine cheeses and dark ales, and we've got a few good ones in there. I recommend anybody that's out there has got some time available, you should stop by. It's going to be great. Martin Johnson's hosting with me, and you got some really incredible cheeses.
You know, I love your place. It's one of my favorite places in Brooklyn.
Thank you, Jimmy.
Yeah.
I like your place, too.
And we're a great team together, man. We have some really special guests tonight. We got Matthias und Matthias. Matthias Trum from Schlenkerle, which is what everyone knows it as, ex-Schlenkerle. Something
very
like
correct.
That.
Yeah. Echt.
And how do we say it?
Echt Schlenkerle.
Echt Schlenkerle.
The old German for genuine. Echt.
That means genuine, really.
That means genuine, yeah. So it's a very old expression, and most people can't read it, so we hear really funny things about it. Some people call it hecht, which is a fine type of fish, so but that's different wording then.
Well, you guys are here doing a really big push. You're in New York City right now. You had what? Last night you had a really great beer dinner at Jimmy's Number 43.
Yeah, there was the chef from the Schlenkerle Tavern is over here as well. And they had the Schlenkerle sausages yesterday and various Schlenkerle styles, of course. And we're going to be here for a couple of days over in Washington and Philadelphia and also here in New York at various locations.
Right. And tonight you're going to be at the Ginger Man.
Right. Correct.
And is that a tasting? What kind of event is that?
We're going to have the Schlenkerle sausages tonight again. It's a special made sausage which we have invented ourselves, and they're homemade at Schlenkerle. The specialty is that they contain not only the meat inside, but also a smoke malt. Schlenkerle is not only a brewery, it's also a malting company. And so it's possibly the only sausage on the world that contains malt.
Is it malted barley?
Yeah, it's malted barley.
And it's smoked at your smokehouse?
Yeah.
Because folks already know that you guys are famous world round for making one of the best smoked beers on the planet.
Thank you.
And the tradition's been gone on for years and years. I'm a big fan. I've been drinking your beer for a long, long time. I'd love to try the sausages. The Ginger Man, really?
Yeah, that's where it's going to be tonight.
What time is that going to?
I think it starts at 6:30, if I'm right. Yeah.
I'll be eating cheese.
All right. But, Matthias, so, you know, people say that your beer is, some people love it and some people can't drink it. Why do you keep to the smoke style, and tell me a little more about the origins of the smoked beers and why you have your particular, you know, you have definitely a unique style of beer.
Well, the specialty of the smoked beer is that the drying of the malt happens over an open fire. This is a very traditional technology, if you will. Beer in the old days, in all the areas where the climate was moist and humid, had to be dried over an open fire. That was the only technology available. So in history, in Central Europe, in Northern Europe, all the beers were smoky to a certain extent. And Schlenkerle kept that tradition all throughout the centuries through the Industrial Revolution, when all the industrial malts came up, which made all the modern beers possible, which are without smoke, of course. But Schlenkerle kept the old tradition very much, well, backwards, if you will, stubborn a little bit. And today, of course, with that, we have a type of beer which is a liquid beer history. So you're drinking yourself into the past. And it really splits up the crowd. There's a lot of people that love it, and there's a lot of people that hate it because the taste is so unique and different. And you will hardly find people in the middle that say, ah, it's okay. It's really one of the two.
Matthias, there's another beer style, and I don't think you guys did it, and I don't want to try and promote other breweries, but there is another smoky beer style from Germany called Steinbrau.
Correct.
And they would heat up rocks, and they put the rocks on. You know, did you import that?
Yeah, we found this small, tiny Austrian brewery about 3 or 4 years ago, and not too far away from the Austrian border to Czech Republic, and they have focused, so to speak, on creating, brewing, rebrewing, redefining bock beer styles, and among others, the classic stone beer. Mm-hmm. And what they do is they take local granite rocks, heat them hot white, and then dump them into the mash tun.
And to bring it to a boil.
Into the mash tun. And then obviously it heats up the water, the mash, and it caramelizes, tons of caramelized character in it. And after about an hour, it takes about an hour for the mash to cool down, and then they transfer it into open fermentation. And you have in this stone beer, you have obviously smoky character in there, but the thing that is very prominent in there is the caramelized character of the beer. Mm-hmm.
This is John from Beer United. If I could add to that very slightly, Ray, what you'll actually see in the region is two distinct beer styles, one called what we translate to a stone beer and then a stone bock or a granite bock.
Okay.
And breweries in that region actually just call their basic lagers that they make for basic drinking granite beers or stone beers, just because that is the granite mining region. It's sort of named after the region. But then you have these granite bocks or these Stein bocks, which are actually
the technology that's available.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
And that's what it comes down to, is that technology. And the caramelization... Merit, yeah. Oh, yeah. Sorry. Same merit civilization of beer. The flavor from the caramelization of that sugar comes off of the rock later on, too. So you get you actually get this sort of candy ball made from the rock, which is pretty interesting to put into the flavor of a beer.
I know we're off on a tangent. I'm just going to ask one more question about this, and we can get back to Shankarla. Do they use the same rocks over and over again?
Yes, they do.
Have like a set of beer rocks.
Yeah. And they have kind of it's really fantastic. It's a small brewery, a little bit smaller than Echtschlengele, and they have this.
That's pretty small,
right?
True,
very small.
True, yeah. Yeah.
And they have this crane, and they lift up obviously those rocks and heat them up, and then just dump it into the open mesh tun. The mesh tun is open. And the mesh tun is also built of this local granite rock, and also the fermentation tank is open, also built of this local granite rock. So there's all the same rock material also impacting on the malt, the wort, and then on the fermentation as well.
Well, I know Six Point, one of the local breweries, Matthias Niedhart from Be United, the founder of Be United, a great importer of small beers. And Matthias Trum, what is your title at Schlenkerler?
That's a very good question. It depends on who you ask. If you ask the locals, the name would actually be Der Breu, so meaning the brewmaster or the brewer. I'm in the sixth family generation, so there's a long family tradition in the tavern and in the brewery. Schlenkerler dating back to the year 1405. So we were brewing and drinking beer well before Columbus set sail to discover the new world here. We're quite proud of that old history.
We've been meeting a lot of Europeans that are part of families, mm-hmm. that have traditions of brewing. Are there still a lot of traditional family, you know, breweries left in Germany? Or are you one of the rare exceptions now?
No, definitely. Brewing very much still is a family thing in Germany. Even some of the bigger ones, like the Bitburger Brauerei, which is an industrial brewery, but it's still family run. And the town of Bamberg holds 9 breweries. And in the county of Bamberg, which is about the size of Brooklyn here, there is almost 100 breweries. Right. And almost all of these are family owned and family operated over many, many generations.
I've been to a bunch of them over there, too. I did a bicycle tour around Bamberg. And it was funny. Not every one of the breweries was as good as yours.
Thank you.
Hit or miss. No. It's your stuff is great. And it was funny how things changed. The different breweries that we went to, I had a great time. I've done it a few years in a row. Just go out there for 10 days, 2 weeks, just ride bicycles around Bamberg. It's just what a beautiful place. And your brewery and tap house is amazing. The pub is amazing.
The family connections are so old. There's a book on the history of Bamberg breweries, and it's really interesting to see how the families even interconnected between the breweries. It reminded me a little bit of what was happening in Europe with the noble classes, you know, kings and queens trying to intermarry.
So you're saying it's incestuous?
Yeah, well.
That, okay, that's let's get some dirt going here.
That's another way of looking at it. The basic idea is...
a lot of inbreeding. You know, I noticed that too when I was there. Guys with three eyes.
Where did you look at? No, of course, that was not the idea. It was the original form of mergers and acquisitions. Nowadays, you do that through the stock market and through hostile takeovers. The original idea was, well, if the one family has a daughter and the other family has a son, have a party together, and maybe they end up together, and you form a new, somewhat bigger brewery, so and have an advantage.
It's not a hillbilly thing.
No, definitely not.
So what makes Bamberg such a great brewing town? I mean, when I've been in Amsterdam, I've been in Brooklyn at breweries, and I see Bamberg malt being used, for example. And I'm hearing stories about, you know, all the great breweries left in Bamberg. I mean, what's so special about it?
Well, it's the diversity, the number of breweries. Bamberg is a town with 70,000 residents, 70. Fairly small town. Everything in walkable distance. Everything downtown you can reach on foot. And there's 9 breweries there, except one, all of them small and handcraft.
What's the big one?
The big one is the Kaiserdom Brewery.
Oh, right. I've been there.
Yep. And they're about 10 times as big as the others.
Right.
Still good beer, but not a craft brewery in the original meaning. And every brewery has its unique style, its unique different taste of beers. And all of this is historic. And then there's the beer gardens in the summertime. You have the countryside around with the many, many breweries there. As you said, you can bicycle from village to village. Mm-hmm. Every village has a church and a brewery, and they're like 2 kilometers apart.
Right, they're very close. You can see the steeple and the smokestack.
Yeah. So, say, in a day, you can do 5 to 10 breweries easily on the bike. And
and live.
Yeah. John Conan, a beer writer from England, once called Franconia the brewing heartland, and I think that really sums it up in a phrase what it is.
I think it's totally correct. I mean, I love the place. I you're never bored there for a second, and the food is really good too. It's very traditional, and I can't wait to go back.
Well, we were really lucky. Last night at Chimney's number 43, we had Chef Wolfgang Thiel. He didn't want to be called Chef. He wanted to be called Wolfgang. Definitely a different tradition than New York City or French chefs. Did a great job with the brewery menu. Okay. I mean, was that a traditional menu that you serve at the brewery? You had it started with the Schlenkler sausages, then potato soup, and then the Bamberg onions, and then a special dessert with chocolate and fruits.
It is a very traditional combination, though mainly people at our tavern come in for drinking beer. So food is important for them, but usually they only have a main dish. So ordering menus is more or less a new concept in Franconia. But all these dishes are on the menu, yes.
It was great. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio.
Money, don't try to save. My heart say go, go. Have a time for Saturday night. Now I'm feeling fine. I'm gonna rock it up. I'm gonna rip it up. I'm gonna shake it up. Gonna ball it up. I'm gonna rock it up. And ball tonight. Got me a date and I won't be late. Pick her up in my 88. Shag on down by the Union Hall. When the joints start jumping, I have a ball. I'm gonna rock it up. I'm gonna rip it up. I'm gonna shake it up. Gonna ball it up. I'm gonna rock it up. And ball tonight. Along about 10, I'll be flying high. Walk on out unto the sky. But I don't care if I spend my gold. Cause tonight I'm gonna be one. I'm gonna rock it up. I'm gonna rip it up. I'm gonna shake it up. Gonna ball it up. I'm gonna rock it up. And ball tonight.
Welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43. My co-host tonight is Ray Dieter from the DBA Bars. We've got a couple great guests tonight, including Matthias Neidhart, the founder of Be United, an importer of small, really great beers from around the world. Matthias, well, we were just having a discussion earlier about Bamberg and the traditions there, and Sam and you were talking about the traditions of beer and food in Germany and how they're different than France. Why don't you tell us a little more about that?
Yeah, we were just talking about it, about the concept of beer dinner in Germany, and I truly believe there's no such concept in Germany of pairing beer with food or and organizing a 5 or 6 course dinner. I don't think there's any has no tradition to it.
You just have beer and you have food. You eat it and you drink it.
That's right. And I think that the beer was first, and then you pair some food, whatever is served at the pub. So I think when you look at today's time, I think Italy, the craft brew scene in Italy, which is exploding, almost approaches from a different angle. Food first and then designing the beer around. But going back to Germany, I don't think there's any concept like this. But I also believe that this is one of the barriers now that exist in Germany to getting people, young people, to understanding beer correctly. Like when I compare Germany and the German culture and young people to United States, where a lot of people are excited about artisanal brewing, artisanal great beer styles, and the flavors, the aromas, the hoppiness, the maltiness, that doesn't exist in Germany. And when I talk to my family back in Germany and talk about beer, paired with food, they basically look at me, have no idea what I'm talking about, except why would you pair beer with food? Beer is mostly there to quench your thirst after a round of golf, whatever it is, or when you hang out with your friend a little bit. But when it really comes to food and dining experience, you switch to wine. And this is very, very different from the United States. And I believe one of the barriers why Germany especially is still lagging way behind this artisanal brewing revolution that took place or has been taking place in the United States but for
also,
many years.
Well, also, what about the beer purity law of 15, whatever it was? I think that kind of holds you guys back to a certain extent.
I keep discussing it with a lot of our brewmasters, and I haven't talked to Matthias about it yet, and I want to hear his opinion. But when I talk to brewmasters, German brewmasters, some say, we should get rid of it. But others say, no, we don't really have to get rid of it. Even within the German purity law, you have so many things that you can creatively do to create exceptionally flavorful, complex, aromatic beers that it's really not the fault of the German purity for German purity law that German beers, for big part, are maybe a little bit one-dimensional, not so exciting or so. Yes, of course, you cannot add spices, fruits, herbs, and all these things. But a brewmaster, if he is exceptionally talented, he can use all the things that are allowed by the German purity law.
No, there's a lot of subtle differences in a lot of the beers. Even in Bamberg, you know, you guys are like 9 breweries in a small town, and it is small. It really is small compared to American standards. Pardon me? Like Hoboken? That makes sense, yeah. And all the breweries that I've been to, they all have a very, 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 very distinguished flavor, you know, very special flavor. But I always wondered about the whole purity law thing about Germany. I mean, in England, you know, they throw chickens into the beer and stuff like that. Now, I'm not saying that throwing chickens into a beer is a good idea. It probably isn't. But there's no law saying you can't do it. And you go to Belgium and they throw cherries and raspberries and all kinds of crazy things into the beer. And I just wonder what would happen if you guys were able to cut loose and just make beer.
As far as I understand, and then Matthias can obviously come in, you are allowed in Germany to go outside the German purity law. You cannot just, if you do that, the only thing you are not allowed to say, you cannot call that beverage beer. So you can do all kinds of things. Yes, that's my understanding of the legal situation now, right, Matthias? That's correct.
That's correct. Okay. We're talking rationally now about the purity law. The purity law has been around since 1516, and it brought a lot to improve beer quality because, right, as you said, at the time, all kinds of things were put into the beer, hallucinogenic herbs, gallbladder fluid, and whatever. I don't even want to name all the stuff that was in there.
Hallucinogenic fluids? Is that what you said?
Yeah. You know, the magic portion legend and all these kind of things, right, that came from the idea of putting all kinds of weird things into a beer, which the consumer, the drinker, doesn't want to have in there. So,
well,
well, I don't want to talk about, I don't want to speak for everyone here, but for my part, some things I don't want to have in beer. So from that point of view, the purity law was a huge improvement. I mean, it was the pre-runner of all the food protective laws which we have today. I mean, even in the States, you cannot put anything into beer because you still have your basic ingredients recipes. Like, you cannot do anything in there which is poisonous to your customers.
No, of course not.
Of course. And so there is a certain set of legal ingredients which you can use, which is larger than in the purity law, of course. I think the discussion goes into the wrong direction, though. The purity law for the Germans is a very much emotional thing. It's not something you can rationalize about. Yes, you could brew more diverse beers without the purity law. And yes, with modern alternative food laws, this beer would still be okay. But the German purity law is a matter of national pride. You know,
I totally get that.
You would never abolish the American eagle from the flag, even if the eagle were to die out. But you still had it there.
There
and,
you go.
And that's very much about the purity law. And the European Union tried to ban the purity law because...
Oh, really? The EU tried to ban it?
The thing is, within Europe has a common market. So
right.
Beers being brewed in England must be freely sold in Germany. So in fact, the European purity law nowadays only accounts for German breweries selling within Germany. So any beer being brewed outside Germany and being sold in Germany can be called beer.
So you could put hallucinogenic fluids into the beers that you sell in England and the rest of the world.
If England allows
Matthias,
that.
Are you listening to this?
If England allows that,
Matthias,
yeah.
Matthias, I have
let's go to Sam, and I'm
going
to bring
you
back to something else.
A question about just your feeling on the purity law, because it really is the basis for a lot of belief in beer, especially in the U.S. And the Brewers Association defines a craft brewery as being small, traditional, and independent. And the traditional part is based on the purity law. And so, you're talking about it being a matter of national pride, that's the purity law there. And I have to say that, I think the American craft brewers have just embraced that to such an extent where I bet they're all like, a few of them say, I think I have a great uncle in Germany, or maybe a great great aunt in Bamberg or something, because they feel so strongly that, the adjuncts, which the Belgians, of course, throw some table sugar in a beer and nobody says anything.
Saccharin.
But as soon as you start using rice and corn here, you're basically ostracized. So just, the transition from, that, 500, 600-year-old thing to the craft brewers just taking that idea and saying, this is one of our tenets. How do you feel that happened?
It's an image thing, really. I mean, for Germans, beer is such a central part of our cultural integrity, of our cultural life. Oktoberfest, of course, is known all across the world, but sitting with your family together in the evening, having dinner, and you have a beer with that. It's just normal. Even younger people starting 15, 16, that's a normal, integral part of the culture, like wine in France. And so if there's a century-old protection on that consumer good, if you want to call it that, of course there's an emotional component.
That's one of the great things about the beer festivals in Germany. I mean, you get little kids, you get teenagers, you get adults, you get grandma and grandpa and all ages, and they're all hanging out together, and they're all listening to music, and they're all having a beer. Something that you really don't see in America. I mean, you just don't see it in our culture, and it's something I think we miss, where people of all ages like hang out with each other. I mean, teenagers do not hang out with adults,
Yeah, no, you're right. There is an expression in German, and I wanted Matthias Niedhardt to explain on it. It's called Gemütlichkeit. Do you think does that have anything to do with the way you eat and drink and...
Yeah,
live in Germany?
Yeah, but as Matthias...
No?
Well, yes, as Matthias said, but this has been built over I don't know, 500, 600, 700 years or so, and it's there. For me, it's a lot of tradition, but the other side of the coin is that it kind of keeps people from thinking outside the box, thinking about beer in a completely different way. That kind of concerns me very, very much. When I speak to families, or when families hang out together in Germany, you have a glass of beer, you have maybe a piece of bread or so, and then you drink or so, but you never associate it with really fine cuisine, very excellent food for the most part. And that's holding back. That also impacts the appreciation people, Germans, have for beer in Germany. If you look at the German beer market, there is, and Matthias might disagree with that, but for the most part, it's price dumping. People don't really value beer anymore as a high value food item that provides an incredible amount of complex flavors and aromas. When you see in Germany the price beer is sold, it's you almost pass out. It's almost a it's almost a commodity. Very small breweries like Matthias with a very special brand or so, they obviously very different. But when you compare that to United States, to how consumers appreciate and value artisanal beers, be it domestic microbrews or international artisanal brews, it's a completely different world, a completely different value set and appreciation.
So, Jimmy, what was that word that you said? The question you asked Matthias?
Gemütlichkeit.
And what does that translate to?
Tradition of hospitality.
Gemütlichkeit means, yeah,
it's just like an hour of. Tell me more about Gemütlichkeit.
Means hanging out together with your family, with your friends, being just comfortable, relaxing, and right, Matthias, is that what it means?
Yeah, I would say a combination of feeling comfortable and some tranquility. Take your time to enjoy, relax, indulge maybe to a certain degree. So I don't know an exact one-to-one translation here, but the combination of that expression. Really,
I once read a Time Life cookbook, and it was about German, food, and it said there was the Gemütlichkeit, the hour, where you would gather with friends in the evening and perhaps have a cocktail or a glass of beer with some cheese or something. Is that for real, or is that just an American cookbook?
It depends on what area you go. I mean, that's the standard problem Germany faces. Whenever you talk to someone, there's these stereotypes, you know, the Lederhosen, the Oktoberfest. But what most people don't realize, Germany is so multifaceted. You have these, I mean, up until like 150 years ago, we weren't even one country. There were all these various German states, Prussia, Bavaria, etc., etc. And so the culture is, of course, very different. And Gemütlichkeit in Bamberg means sitting at a brewery tap, together with some friends, maybe playing some cards, talking all evening about politics, about, well, anything but your women, of course. So that really is the Gemütlichkeit, and having 5 or 6 pints in the evening. And what I wanted to say on the price issue here, I agree with Matthias that the price level in Germany, especially of the industrialized beers, is wickedly low. I mean, you can buy a crate of beer at like 5 euros from an industry brewery. On the other hand, beer is so much part of our culture, and in Bavaria still regarded as nutrition, as food, that in past times it was important for politicians to keep beer affordable for everyone. So it's not surprisingly that these craft beers from small breweries that don't have a marketing scheme behind, that don't pay supermarkets listing fees and all that, that they still are quite affordable, like 14, 15 euros a crate, and still have high quality at the time. So, of course, this stops people at a certain level to pay like $20 for a bottle when they can have a very good craft beer at 15 euros a crate. And at that 15 euros, the craft brewery, the family brewery, still can live on.
So does the German government sustain the industry to a certain extent?
In the old days, it did that on a much larger scale because beer was food.
Right.
Nowadays, the only sustenance from the state is that there is a different taxation level depending on the size of brewery you are. Uh-huh. But apart from that, no, there's no help in that respect.
Hey, John Lundbaum from Beer United. What beers are we drinking right now?
Good question.
Very good question. The beer that's in most of our glasses is the Schlenkele Märzen, which is essentially the day-to-day beer that served at the Schlenkele Brewpub. The next beer we're going to taste is something that I think is really interesting, and something that sort of touches on what we were discussing before in reference while we were discussing the Rheinheitsgebot, which is that there are brewers in Germany who manage to have vision and manage to be very, very progressive and extremely inventive within what you might say the confines or the rules of the law. And the next beer we're going to taste is actually the Schlenkerle Oaksmoker, Eiche. Is that, am I pronouncing that correctly? German? Eiche. Eiche.
Eiche.
Yeah, I can't. My German is, my fake German is horrible.
Hey, John, how strong are these beers generally?
Schlenkerle Märzen is, what, 5.2? 5.1. And then the Oaksmoke is 8.8%.
8%? Yep. That's unusually strong for a German beer.
And what's so interesting about the Oaksmoke is it's an attempt by Matthias Trum, brewmaster extraordinaire, not only to do something new and something exciting for his brew pub, but also to embrace the history of the brewery all within the quote-unquote confines of this Reinheitsgebot, which really, I think, speaks to the vision and speaks to the abilities. Do you want to tell us a bit more about it?
That's really brilliant. Let's sit on that for a minute. We're going to take a little break on Beer Sessions Radio. We'll be right back. Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network, sponsored by greatbrewers.com and supported by the Good Beer Seal. We're drinking a really cool beer from Germany. It's the Echt Schlenkerle, the Oak Smoked. And how do you say it, Matthias?
Echt Schlenkerle Eiche.
Eiche. And this is a very unusual beer for you, isn't it? For Germany as well.
Yeah, that's, if you will, a new invention, but a rediscovery of an old style. As said earlier, Schlenkerle is not only a brewery, it's also a malt house. So very traditionally, we still do our own malt. And the classic Schlenkerle smoke malt is made with, or is kilned with, a beech wood fire. So we have beech from local forests. And as was said earlier, I'm trying to be inventive within the boundaries of the purity law. And so I looked into history, and obviously wherever beech was not available, other fuels, other types of woods were used for malting. So we experimented, and we did a malt batch with oak wood. Now, oak is nowadays, and even in old times, was seldomly used for kilning food, for drying food, because oak was a very valuable type of wood for construction, for shipbuilding. In England, most of the oak wood was used for building the ships for the colonization. And so this oak wood has a very different aroma in the kiln, in the firing, because it burns with less smoke than the beech does. And the smoke is not as harsh and not as strong as in the beech. And the resulting malt, therefore, is milder, more subtle on the smoky note, and is more complex, like a multifaceted smoke. And in order to bring out the taste most intensively, we decided to brew a double bock out of that. Therefore, the alcohol content is, for Bamberg standards, quite high. It's 8% alcohol, and it comes at a beautiful amber color, and is perfect for Christmas and winter time. It's a session beer you can have in front of your campfire, fireplace at home.
As long as you're not driving.
Well, yeah.
And, you know, Franconia is, Bamberg's in Franconia.
Right.
And it's technically part of Bavaria.
Unfortunately, yes.
And we won't go into politics, but why do you not make a Pilsner?
Pilsner beers are not common to the Franconian area. Never have been. Pilsner beers ask for very soft water. The area of Pilsen in Czech Republic, where Pilsner was originally brewed, has naturally very soft water. Franconia's waters are very hard, a lot of rock mountains there. So the traditional beer styles in Franconia are very malty and dark and rich in taste. And nowadays, of course, with water purification, it would be possible to brew Pilsner beers, but it's not a traditional style having been around. And the Franconian tongue, if you will, is not accustomed to the Pilsner taste. We're not fond of really strong hoppy aromas, and therefore the Pilsners of the big national breweries have problems in Bavaria and Franconia.
Matthias, you know, you've really been a seminal, you know, figure in beer for New York City and the whole country in terms of the selections, you know, of beer. What do you look for? You know, you found this great brewery, Schlenkerla. What do you look for when you're importing beer? I mean, you have one of the most interesting portfolios of beer in the whole world.
Well, two things. Just going back to Matthias, and he has one brand in his portfolio. I find it an unbelievable beer. It's the Echtschlenkerle Helles. Helles indicates kind of, the style is a Munich Helles, kind of a session beer, 5%, really malty with very, very subdued hop character. And when you drink his Echtschlenkerle Helles, has a beautiful, beautiful little nose and touch of smokiness in there, although he's not using any smoked malt in it, and he might elaborate on that. I think it's a fascinating beer because it misleads people a lot into thinking it's a smoke beer, which it's really not. But back to your question is, what we are trying to do in our company, we started in 1995, is we try to find the most extraordinary examples of as many styles of beer that are brewed worldwide, and we obviously we are looking countries outside United States and all these mostly small breweries that exist there. And we started in the mid 90s, and they were the classic, really the world classic breweries that defined styles. Hellertrum Echtschlenkerle, it's the definition of smoke beer, and then we went on to Schneider, the classic wheat beer, and then Einbecker with the classic bock beer style, and we travel to England with barley wines. And what we do is, in our company, before we make a decision on taking on a brand, we all taste, and basically we only bring in that brand if all agree that this is extraordinarily complex and flavorful in its style. Very rarely do I overrule people. So it's really, we are not taking in a brand unless we are all basically convinced that this is an extraordinary example of that specific style we are looking
democratic.
For.
It's democratic.
Well, and this is John here, and the decisions can be quite heated at times.
It is quite heated, but it's a great, great selection mechanism to make sure that we are, our portfolio is huge, and many people tell us it's you know, it's too big, but there are a ton of great beers out there. But for us, it's a mechanism that we put in place to make sure that we stick to this concept of bringing in the most complex beers of that style.
You guys were really instrumental in the early days of bringing in cask ales from England, the actual real cask ales winners from the Great British Beer Festival and stuff. I was really excited when you guys started doing that many years ago with Ron Wood.
Ron Fisher, right?
Ron Fisher, sorry.
Yeah, we started doing that in 1996, 97, and we still do it. And we only do it from like early November until like very early March, because that's the only time of the year where you can really bring it in, and then you can ship it within the United States. Starting mid-March, it's becoming way too warm outside, and then the cask would explode. And it's a big part of our company, yes.
J.W. Lee's, and you've got a great bunch of great breweries from England that I always look forward to when you bring them through.
Yeah, absolutely. And many in casks, and Harvest now from Scotland, or Thornbridge Hall, very young new breweries from England. And then the classic ones, the RCH brewery.
Oh, they're great.
Yeah. And it's a fun part. And actually, we are going to make available the Echtschlenkerle Oak Smoke, the Matthias Doppelbock, available in casks later on in December this
Holy
year.
Shit.
And we are really, really intrigued about it. Yep.
Awesome. One last question from Matthias Trum. Sam Merritt had asked earlier, where did the name come from, Schlenkerla? It's a very interesting name.
The name again, goes back into history. Everything about Schlenkerla seems to be about history. One of my ancestors, according to legend, had had an accident in the brewery, and he fell over a wooden barrel, probably, and he was limping afterwards, carrying a stick. And because of that limping, he was dangling his arms. And in Franconian vernacular, if you walk like that, it means you schlenker, wenn man schlenkert. It's pretty much the same the same thing what a drunk person would do. So
stagger. It means stagger?
Staggering, yeah. Dangling, staggering.
I never knew that. I never knew that. I thought it was a family name.
No. Well, actually, there was an American guy in our tavern last year, and he showed me his business card, Schlenker Enterprises, and was wondering whether we were related. maybe I should have asked him how big the company is and should have said yes, but no. No connection there. No, to Schlenker means to walk like a drunk person do, basically. So apparently, the people were making fun of my ancestor, call him the diminutive, the Schlenkerla, the little dangling guy. And over time, the name got transferred to the tavern.
That has a whole other meaning in America.
Well, I'm getting to that. Give me a second.
Okay. But wait. Is the brewery connected to the pub? You also have a pub?
History.
Come on.
In Bamberg, it is in such a way that the beer is always or used to be brewed in the brew pub itself. Then the beer was brought to old caves for lagering. The classic Schlenkerla smoke beer is a lager type beer. These are caves underneath the town in a long tunnel system, 1,000-year-old caves and tunnels. And temperature is low there all year round, so you don't need artificial cooling. You can make lager beers all year round. And after the 2 months of lagering, the beer is brought back down to the tavern for tapping. Now, in the 19th century, when artificial cooling was invented, all breweries except Schlenkerla closed down their lagering facilities and built new artificially cooled tank containers next to the breweries to lager the beer there. My ancestors made a different decision. They said, we want to keep the brewery pub in place and to use as much room there as possible. And we kept on using the lagerings and built a new brewery facility. That's 150 years ago, new. a new brewery facility on top of the old lagerings. So nowadays, brewery and brewery pub are separated.
That's really cool. And do you live above the pub?
Yes, I do.
You really do live?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a crazy place to live. It's always packed.
Well, ask my wife. She says the same thing. But
it's a really busy area. I'm sure you have a place to escape to.
But when you go back to, when you have a chance to visit Echt Schlenkerla, the tavern, obviously, but also the brewery. The brewery is extraordinary. The brewery, when you go there and they allow you in, and obviously you see the kilning area and where everything is smoked, but then you go downstairs. You go really downstairs into cellars, classic cellars where all the tanks are there, and it's incredible.
It's Bamberg catacombs. Actually, the Bamberg Tourism Board offers tours down there. There was an entire city down there. In World War II, they had bomb shelters down there. There were factories down there. There's a church down there, living areas down there. It's an extensive maze just underneath the town.
And now there's beer down there.
Although our lagerings are sealed off by a wall, because my father told me when he put that wall up in the 60s, beer was constantly stolen from down there. So
what a surprise.
Yeah, I wouldn't have been surprised either.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like a beautiful place.
It is.
Ray, you've been to Bamberg.
I've been there a few times, yeah. I love that town. It's just one of the great towns in the world to go to.
What are some of the other brew pubs or pubs or breweries we should visit we travel there?
I know it's kind of the competition for you guys, but they're a little smaller than you. Speziale makes a great Rausch beer as well. And there's a place that I actually had a pretty good Pilsner at, but it wasn't in the old part of town where you guys are. It was more...
Well, there's a place opposite from the Spezial Brewery. It's the Fessler Brewery.
Oh,
and
yeah.
They have a quite good Pilsner.
That's okay.
For Franconian standards.
Yeah, but that place was all old men. Like, I don't think I saw anybody in there under the age of about, you know, there was nobody under the age of my age.
Okay. Did you go to the church, maybe?
No. I wouldn't. I actually stayed, because all the breweries have, not all of them, but a lot of them have like a hotel or a bed and breakfast above the breweries.
Yeah,
Spezial does. Mars, I think, is putting in one too. And the brewery that you're speaking of, they have
the Fessler.
Yeah, Fessler. Yeah, they have. You can stay there too. And I stayed there at least once or twice above the brewery. And every time I came downstairs, it was like all these old guys were just like sitting there, just drinking these small glasses of beer. I mean, 10 o'clock in the morning. It was. I mean, I love that town.
again, you have to think differently about German beer drinkers. We are very much patriotic, not only about German beer, but about our own particular brewery. The Bamberg Brewery Pub is a little bit like the living room for those people. So they go to the same place all the time. And Fessler very much has the working class.
It's almost like it's like a football team, isn't it? It's like there's certain people that come to your brewery, there's certain people coming to the other breweries, and that's their team.
Right.
And that's where they go every day. They're not going to be caught dead at another one of the of the gardens, beer gardens. That's where they go. And it's just amazing seeing these guys. They read the papers, they talk, they smoke lots of cigarettes, and drink all this wonderful beer.
Smoking no more possible in the taverns. There was in Bavaria, they had...
Even in the beer garden?
Outside, yes,
okay.
But in the inside, not anymore.
Right.
There was a popular vote in August, and the majority of the population decided to ban smoking from taverns.
Wow. How do you feel about that? How does it affect business?
Well, for us, it's actually quite good because all the smokers are standing now in the street, still drinking the beer, of course.
Right, you can
and
do that there.
And since Schlenkele is always, always crowded and you never find a seat in there, now there's empty seats and someone else is sitting there. So.
And you're still spilling beer to the people that aren't in the place. That's great.
Yeah.
It's like New Orleans. You have go cups. It's great. Go cups. You can take your drink outside of the bars in New Orleans. You can just... You walk into a bar, you get a drink, and like go for a walk.
In a
go cup. It's a plastic cup.
Well, in Bamberg, you don't need a special law for that. I mean, you just stand on the street and drink because that's legal.
The whole world, you don't need a special law for. America's kind of ridiculous about that stuff.
One last thing about Bamberg. So I've been in places where I've seen bags of Bamberg malt. Is there a malt industry in Bamberg?
In the 19th century, as in most other beer areas, big industrial malting companies were formed. And there's two Bamberg malting companies, the Bamberg Malting Company and the Weyermann Malting Company. And the latter one, that's probably the one you've seen, because they specialized in unique malts, specialty malts, and they sell in like 50 or 60 different countries worldwide these days. And especially for the craft brewing market, they have a lot of malts to offer.
So one of the things that's unique is that you do make your own malt.
Right, correct.
Which is pretty amazing.
I know where you saw those bags of malt, too. That was at the Six Point Brewery when we did the brewery day there.
And I've seen them
at stacks of them.
In Amsterdam, too. So I've seen them in two countries. Yeah.
Captain Lawrence.
Yeah. Everybody gets Bamberg. But that's what we had a great, that's a whole other episode because we have talked about developing malting industries in America. There's one up in Hadley, Massachusetts, Valley Malt. We had a call in with them a few weeks ago. But guys, you know what? It's that time of night. We're just going to say thanks to the Good Beer Seal. Tonight there's Six Point Craft Ales takes over the Pony Bar. Tomorrow night at Blind Tiger Ale House, Cigar City Brewing from Tampa, Florida. Check out the full calendar listings at goodbeerseal.com. Thanks to our sponsor, greatbrewers.com. I'd like to thank everyone on the show tonight, especially Sam Merritt, our beer expert and great co-host, Ray Dieter, John, Mateus, and Mateus from Schlenkele and Be United. Thanks so much. We'll see you next week on Beer Sessions Radio.
This song is more to the point. Roll out the barrel and lend me your ears. I like beer.